About Montreal, let's go back to Detroit. Yeah, you know, with the win, they still only have 51 points on the season, which is, you know, tied for third worst in the NHL. To me, they're just certain, you know, when I think of baseball, it just when the Yankees are not relevant, then something's wrong. To me, there's just something wrong in the NHL if Detroit is not relevant per se.
Well, Detroit certainly went through a good quarter century of superiority in the NHL. If you think about the early 90s all the way through the mid to late 2000s there, I mean, they were the measuring stick. The Preds obviously faced them quite a bit when they got in the league in 1998, and they were the team they always prided themselves against and said, okay, that's the guys we got to try to beat. Obviously came out on the short end of the stick more often than not, but they were the team. I mean, you look at Detroit nowadays, you're looking at some salary cap issues, a lot of youth on the team. What are they doing with Jimmy Howard? I mean, the team is in shambles right now out in the Eastern Conference. It's also weird if you think about Detroit only playing Chicago twice a year. That is a long time original six rivalry, been in the same division since basically the beginning of time, and all of a sudden they only play each other twice a year. So that's also a little bit odd as well when you think about that.
Greg Michopoulos joining us again. All right, so tonight, Montreal is in town, and it's the first meeting with both Shea Weber on the ice at the same time with P.K. Subban. And I was texting you earlier today, and we were talking about this. And to me, just based on the things that came out, you know, after the game and in the interviews after the loss to Detroit on Tuesday, about the lack of communications at time going on, to me, this is another distraction, per se, that probably P.K. Subban and the rest of the team don't need, because at this point, if you're looking for consistent play, that means everybody has to be on the same page for three periods. It only takes a couple of mental breakdowns to cost you a win in the league. And that, to me, with this extra little storyline, you can pretend it's not out there, but it is. It makes you wonder if it will have an impact on the ice tonight.
That's a rather striking statement to make, too, that they're having issues communicating on the ice, or they're not communicating as well as they should on the ice. Guys, you've been together. The top four of this team has been together now for 2.5 seasons. If you haven't figured out how to communicate in 2.5 seasons, what are you doing out there? Quite frankly, I mean, I realize, you know, some of the times all the guys have been injured, you're not there the entire time, but let's be honest, supposedly on paper anyway, this is the best top four defensive core in the NHL. And if you've watched the last couple of months of hockey, they sure don't play like it. I mean, they've been incredibly leaky in their own zone, giving up high danger chances, giving up odd man rushes left and right. I mean, we saw the stat against St. Louis on Sunday afternoon. At one point in the game, it was 10-1 odd man rushes. You should never be giving up 10 odd man rushes in a game. And it's not like, well, we're being aggressive on defense and we're getting chances too. No, you weren't. St. Louis just shut you down and wasn't allowing you to get any odd man rushes the other way as well. So it's a big problem to have. And when you hear things like that in the locker room and you look at the goal he scored against Detroit, a power play goal, no less, a power play goal at home to tie the game, and a very, very reserved celebration from P.K. Subban, you never see that. So something tells me there's something going on in the locker room that we don't know about yet.
You know, you brought up an excellent point earlier today. And, you know, if we had talked about this team, just, you know, remember earlier in the season, Vegas got off to the sluggish start and then they righted the ship. A couple of other teams right now with very nice records, same situation. If we were talking about Nashville starting the year 3-13, meaning 3 wins, 13 losses, and now to be in this situation where you're 12 games above 500, 71 points, it'd be, okay, great. You know, you'd be a lot more optimistic than the fact that Nashville was 13-3 in their first 16 games, and now since then, 20-18-5, and that's just not cutting it for this team.
No, it's not. And you could, you know, go back to when it started was after the win at Dallas in overtime. That was when Victor Arvidsson broke his thumb and was out for several weeks. But again, David Poile said, well, let's wait till everybody gets back healthy and let's see where our team stands. Okay, well, your team's healthy. You get embarrassed by Winnipeg on home ice. You get embarrassed by St. Louis in a weekend series where you only get one overtime point out of that. You lose to Dallas. You split with Dallas, who's well below you in the standings. This is your roster right now. So if you're analyzing and you're looking at this and saying, all right, well, we're healthy now and we're still not playing that well, what's really the problem now? Because that was the biggest excuse we heard for a month or two, was that, well, Forsberg's out, Arvidsson's out. What do you expect? Of course, they're your top-line guys. You're going to lose some games. Well, everybody's back, and the first line is carrying the team right now. But the problem is, it's not carrying the team enough. You can't have one line. Look at Colorado. Colorado started off great this season, and they have absolutely gone down the gutter the last probably month and a half of the season. They're not even in a playoff spot at this point when they were supposed to contend possibly for a Central Division. So you're going to need more than one line if you're going to win games. As simple as that.
Do you ever even open up the possibility and open up that Pandora's box by breaking up the main line?
I have actually argued that, yes, you should. I did just some number crunching and looked around and see, all right, how would I break things up? Me, personally, I like to have a guy that can generate his own offense on his own on every line. So I threw some lines together. I said, all right. And people overreacted to this when I posted this about readjusting the lines. And this isn't a first, second, third line. This is balancing out the scoring line. So you split up the
line. See, that's my point right there. Yeah, continue.
Absolutely. You split them up. That way you have guys out there on every shift that can generate offense. It's not, well, we played the second, third line. All right, Joe Flynn, get back out there real quick and try to do some damage. So I came up with some lines. I said Johansson, centering Smith and Fiala. Johansson, obviously the best distributor on the team. Smith is a sniper. He's not going to pass the puck off very often. He's not going to generate offense on his own very often. Fiala can generate offense on his own. The problem is he's a turnover machine in the offensive zone. Give the puck to Johansson, have him try to find Fiala. Another line, Turris between Yarncroke and Forsberg. Yarncroke's played out in Forsberg's line before. Turris, he needs to get going. What better way to get Turris going? Put somebody like Forsberg out there who can generate his own scoring chances and get Turris rolling out there. Yarncroke, he's been quiet as well. He gets a hat trick this season, but he's only got 10 goals all year. So that's not consistent enough offense. Another line, Bonino. And how about this for your wingers? Grimaldi and Arvidsson. Those two guys on the same line will be absolutely sit at the edge of your seat watching those guys play on the same line. Get Bonino going. Bonino's been, I would say, aside from Johansson, probably your best center this season, the way he's been going. Put him out there with those two guys and see what he can generate, because he's a guy that's not afraid to get in front of the net. Let those guys generate forecheck, get the puck, and get the puck to the front of the net. And then your fourth line, I mean, you can go Boyle, Sissons, and Hartman on your fourth line, and now, okay, you've got some size, you've got some physicality on that fourth line. Hartman on a good night can generate his own chances as well. So, and Sissons is very, again, hot and cold. We need some more out of him. But overall, yeah, I absolutely would split up the Joe line, get more balanced scoring out of there, and break up Yossi and Ellis. They've been terrible. I don't know why they keep putting them together. They teased it a little bit with putting Yossi and Subban and Ekholm and Ellis back together. I would go back to that defensive pairing, put Ekholm and Ellis back together.
I mean, I go back to, and we look at other sports and other teams that have been successful. I mean, just go back to the Patriots. Julian Edelman, he didn't play wide receiver, and he was a quarterback at Kent State, drafted as almost a throwaway pick in the seventh round. And it's like, okay, what do we do with him? The bottom line is, it's almost a situation where the team afraid to make that bold move that we're talking about, because if things fall apart in the playoffs, there's not a run, then you go, oh, why did you mess up and destroy what you the big thing that you had going for you? But at the same time, if you do nothing and you have a repeat performance of last year, then what good was it? Because here's the thing, what happened last year, by the way, once the Predators made the playoffs, that you thought you could count on during the regular season? You thought you could count on offensive production from your defensemen once it was time for postseason. Well, that didn't happen. You can't always count on the things that you just anticipate having. But, you know, my point is, if you're not getting the results that you want, then try something, especially right now that we're still mid-February. Now, if you're talking about early April and wanting to go down this path, I would say probably not the best of ideas, but why not for a couple of weeks and see what happens?
Yeah, no question about it. You still have over a quarter of the season remaining right now. And look, the Predators are making the playoffs. Nobody's saying they're in danger of missing the playoffs. Quite frankly, a lot of teams besides Dallas and St. Louis, they've gone down the tubes here as of late. Like I said, I spoke about Colorado. Minnesota is another team that's barely hanging on to a playoff spot right now, but they're not playing very well, and they lost Miku Koivu long term. So there's a lot of teams out there that just aren't playing very well in the Central Division, one, probably the best division last season, and now one of the worst in the division if you look at it top to bottom. But it's things like that where you can't just turn a switch on come playoff time. We saw it last season. They're like, well, they basically coasted to the President's Trophy. I mean, they had a little bit of a stretch there where Tampa Bay was kind of close to them. But they win the President's Trophy. Okay, now we're good because we only lost 9 regulation games at home all year. We're good to go. We'll make it to the Stanley Cup Final again. What happened? Colorado punched them in the mouth and took them to a 6-game series with a backup and a third-string goaltender. And Colorado still gave them everything they needed to fight for. Winnipeg comes into your building and wins 3 out of 4. Not good enough. You could argue about turning on that switch, but as it stands right now, there's no switch to be turned on. I mean, you've had opportunities. You've had division rivals come into your building and embarrass you. You've had what should be, as crazy as Charlie would like to say, a shine game. You have Detroit coming in, a bad team on a 3-game losing streak, and you should be pissed off about what happened against St. Louis, and you let them come into your building and beat you, particularly in the third period where you had zero heart, zero drive in that third period. They had 3 shots on goal 17 minutes into that third period on home ice in what was a tie game. That's just embarrassing. I'm sorry.
I mean, yeah, going into the contest Tuesday night, we're talking about a Detroit team that had, just a lot of points there. They had, 49 points going into the Nashville game on Tuesday night. I mean, they're just not very good this year, and yet the Predators made them look good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that, like I said, has salary cap issues. They've got a lot of youth on their team. I mean, you saw Athanasio score a ridiculous backhand goal that Rene, of course, took all the blame for, which is that's what Pekka does. He's going to take the blame for goals and take the blame for losses, and when they win, he's going to praise his teammates. That's who he is. So he gave up that bad goal, but he made several stops earlier on in the game, but the biggest problem for them in their own zone is in front of their own net. I mean, what led to that goal by Athanasio is Adam Glendening in front of the net, basically like Thomas Holmstrom, and just standing there with nobody within 10 feet of him, gets the screen, Rene, and a simple shot from the point. Rene can't get a read on it, so he gets a piece of it, and it generates a rebound. If there's not a guy in front of the net, Rene smothers that puck, you get a face-off, there's no scoring chance. So very soft in front of their own zone and not enough jam in the opposition zone to generate enough scoring chances, those danger chances we talk about all the time in front of the net to get those rebounds. What did Detroit do on the power play? They shot it on net, had traffic in front, had a rebound goal. It's not that complicated, guys, and yet somehow, some way, the Preds managed to get a 5-on-3 against Detroit and have nobody within 10 feet of the net when Arvidsson gets their only shot on goal during that sequence. It's just not good enough.
Greg Michopoulos with Prednik Nation joining us. You know, a couple of things in sports, and once again, this translates to all sports, not just hockey, football, basketball, you name it. One of the toughest things in sports is teaching players, you know, how to win. But the other part of that is dealing with success once you start winning. And we go back to, you know, 2 years ago, Preds made the run to the Stanley Cup before losing to Pittsburgh. Last year, the regular season, you know, the Nashville most points in the NHL in the regular season. They win the President's Trophy and then certainly did not live up to expectations once it was time for the playoffs. Now, you know, to me, there's just something not quite right. There's a disconnect. Now, you were alluding to it earlier today via text message with me that you have a theory. I'm curious to see what your theory is about all of this.
Well, here's my theory, and it goes back to Peter Laviolette. Peter Laviolette, throughout his coaching career, is his fourth NHL franchise. His first franchise, the New York Islanders, was there for 2 years, made the playoffs both years, gets fired. Well, he was GM'd by Mike Milbury, enough said. There's not his fault on that one. He goes to Carolina, where he meets Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy becomes his right-hand man in Carolina. They win a Stanley Cup. A couple years later, he gets fired by the owner, Peter Karmanos, because, well, he didn't like his personality. He wasn't a personable guy. Okay, that's who Laviolette is. He goes on to Philadelphia, has success there, takes them to a Stanley Cup final, gets fired 3 games into an NHL season, which is equivalent to the end of the first quarter of week 1 in the NFL. Imagine that. After 1 quarter, your coach gets fired. That's basically what happened to Peter Laviolette in Philadelphia. And the reasoning was Paul Holmgren, their general manager, said, well, I really didn't like the way – that was probably the worst training camp I've ever seen, so we waited a couple games and then we fired him. really stupid on his part, quite frankly. But in Alavia that comes here, we worry about, okay, what's his lifespan? What's his expiration date with the Nashville Predators? It was all looking gold through gold-colored glasses there for a while. Now you have to wonder, Laviolette is not the same guy. You've heard the sound bites a million times with him at the Winter Classic when he was coaching Philadelphia, play with some jam, and he's out there just cursing out players left and right, telling them to win a shift out there or you're not going to get another shift the rest of the game. Where is that Peter Laviolette at right now? And I think my theory goes to this. You can't possibly chew out your players when Laviolette is essentially falling on his sword for Kevin McCarthy right now. He's been his assistant coach for 15 years. Wherever he's gone, McCarthy's followed him. And right now, the power play is pathetic to watch. And that used to be a thing with the Preds where you get a power play on home ice, the crowd gets excited. The crowd literally groans when the Preds get a power play because they know nothing's going to happen. And the fact that Laviolette is going to lay on a sword for Kevin McCarthy, that's the reason McCarthy's not gone. Because if you get rid of McCarthy, you're probably getting rid of Laviolette. I don't think David Poile wants to make that move, obviously. So that's my theory right now with the coaching staff. And it kind of goes back to what Subban said afterwards, where the communication is not quite there. That celebration wasn't there. A lot of things kind of piecing together the puzzle right now that is the Nashville Predators locker room.
Well, you know, I know the Preds loved playing songs with certain situations during the course of the night. Maybe they should bring out Prince's 1999 because that's the way the Predators are playing on the power play, just like they did that first season.
Yeah,
that's not a good thing, by the way.
It's all Peter Laviolette because the first four seasons he was here, 19%, 19%, 17%, and 20%. And now this season they're at 13% on the power play. That's abysmal. I mean, you should, by luck, by fluke, should get more than that. They have 26 power play goals all season. That's the third fewest in the league, and they've had the third most power play opportunities. Remember last season, all we could talk about was the Preds taking penalties.
Right.
They were the most penalized team in the league. They stopped doing that this year, and now their power play is making it worse for them. I mean, they've given up seven shorthanded goals on top of that. So on their power play, they're only a plus 19 when it comes to goals. That's just beyond pathetic right there, guys. I mean, that's not gonna cut it. And I know it's not all doom and gloom. Look, they're the fourth best team in the Western Conference. There's about 20 other teams in the league that really want to be where the Preds are right now. But when you have these high expectations, you're gonna have to face some criticisms and face some questions. Right now, the Preds, even their most hardened fans with their gold-colored glasses, are questioning where this team is going right now.
Yeah, but you go back to the fact, if without the 13-3 start, where would this team be today? And the other part about it too, just like we talked about earlier in this segment, when you have somebody like PK Subban talking about the lack of communication out there, you know, this is not just a, you know, one night situation. Obviously, this has been something the players have been thinking about. Obviously, the coaching staff, all the coaches should be quite aware of this being an issue. And to me, it's almost like you started picking at a scab and now it's bleeding all over the place.
Well, that's the thing is if you watch them play, it's like, yes, he said it, there's lack of communication. Well, yeah, no kidding, there's lack of communication. When you have two consecutive games against the Blues and you leave Vladimir Tarasenko in front of your own net with nobody even close to it to even breathe on him several times in a span of two games, that's a problem. That's a lack of communication. That's a lack of just simple-minded defensive play in your own zone.
But we saw that. But we saw this.
You protect that high slot and that slot area around your net. You protect it like your baby, or like your wife, or whatever the case is. You protect that area of the ice. You force everything towards the boards, make them outwork you along the boards and try to generate chances that way. You cannot give guys, particularly with the talent of Tarasenko, all the time in the world in front of your net. And he even missed a couple opportunities. He might have actually had two hat tricks in those two games had he capitalized on all the chances he had. So, it's terrible play in your own zone, and it's really mind-boggling that they're this talented, supposedly, on paper, and can't seem to function like an even average defensive core right now.
But we go back. I mean, this was an issue in the postseason last season. And so this isn't just a problem for, you know, 2018-19. This was also at the tail end of last year. We started seeing signs of this where, you know, it's great if you do things right for 90% of the time, 95% of the time. It's those, you know, the lack of consistency and all of a sudden you're at a disadvantage because you're not where you need to be. And we saw it frequently in the playoffs last year. We've been seeing it throughout the regular season this year.
Yeah, look back at the playoffs last year, and you couldn't win a home game against Winnipeg. You lost, you know, you lost the chance to clinch the series against Colorado on home ice. You had to go back on the road to do that. And I mean, Winnipeg, people forget, the Preds had a 3-0 lead in Winnipeg in Game 3, and found a way to blow that one out and just get blown out of the.
No, we didn't forget, Greg. We didn't forget.
I mean, if people could argue about their home games. It was like you had a 3-0 lead on the road in the playoff game. That should be a slam dunk, and it wasn't.
And it took, what, 5 minutes? I think it was 5 minutes for that lead to go away, right?
It happened very quickly, yeah. Yes. And I think Laviolette called timeout to try to calm things down, but at that point it was way too late. So it's those things where, like, if you're getting rattled by – I mean, you should not be rattled. These guys are veteran players. They're not 35-year-old grizzled veterans. These are guys in the prime of their careers, and they seem to get rattled way too often and way too easily, in my opinion.